Case number 85073, Deutsche Bank versus SFR. It's a good thing we have case numbers, otherwise that would not be particularly distinctive. But in any event, is everybody ready to proceed? All right. Counsel, why don't you come on up? Would you like to reserve any time for rebuttal?
5 minutes, please.
Okay, and as you know, and as you heard again, when the clock ticks down to 5 minutes, you'll get the yellow light and a tone that warns you that you're now into what you hope to be your rebuttal time. Go ahead.
May it please the court, Darren Brenner for Deutsche Bank. Crane's bill is a workable analysis for determining application of the homeowner's partial payment toward the super priority when it is followed and correctly applied. Under Crane's bill, we apply a three-part analysis. First, we look at whether there was an actual expression of debtor intent to direct payment towards the super priority. If no debtor intent, we then look to creditor intent by determining if the association allocated in a certain way. If no specific creditor intent, we then default to equity, which assumes the homeowner paid the super priority portion of the lien based on the homeowner's obligation under the deed of trust, the restatement, footnote 3 of Crane's bill, and the unpublished yet persuasive KK real estate opinion.
Before we get to Crane's bill, could we discuss the procedural posture of this case? Because I honestly cannot figure out where we are. So it was remanded on summary judgment, and then there are findings of fact and a judgment entered, but there's been no trial. Can you shed any light on that?
It is a little bit unusual. I think the most logical construction is the parties did their second round of briefing on summary judgment, and there was no disputed issue of fact that was left over once the district court resolved the summary judgment issue, so ergo, no trial.
But you didn't stipulate to any facts, and I that's not what I understood when I was going through this. There weren't issues of fact that were to be determined.
I'm not 100% sure I heard you right, but there is a stipulation which lists facts. I apologize. I don't have it in the record in front of me. It's in that small pile of paper if you need me to get the record site. But there is a stipulation with facts.
Are there – so you think the court's order was a grant of summary judgment under Rule 56?
Yes, Your Honor.
And I read in preparation for today, there was some discussion on the record with Judge Sterman about stipulating to having a proceeding, whether it would be closing arguments and discussion about the exhibits, as opposed or otherwise a trial was going to be set, which I have to say sounded to me almost like the parties were stipulating to like a sort of a bench trial on the briefs or something of that nature. That's what it sounded like. Well, that's what it read like.
Yeah, that's part of the problem, that it's not clear. That would be a reasonable interpretation as well, but I don't think it is the most reasonable interpretation. It went up and down based on a Rule 56 motion. The parties then supplemented their prior Rule 56 briefing. There was discussion about there being no need for a trial, but what I divine from that is that the parties were essentially saying there are no issues of material fact. I think part of where the court is getting stuck is because we see the byproduct of this stipulation is the parties disagreeing about how the evidence should be construed. So there's not a clear match between what the parties articulated to the court and what was produced. I don't know that we can resolve this fully, other than I can tell you what I already said about the 56 briefing, and all there was a hearing. Admittedly, I was not there, so I only have the same record that the court has to review.
So when you're talking about express and implied intent when it comes to the debtor and the creditor, how do you get there? There's got to be some kind of conflict there, or what was stipulated there?
Well, there is a conflict. What the parties stipulated to was that certain payments were made at a certain period in time, and that those were the payments for, really, one of them was a grouping of payments from 2011 to 2014.
Right, but when you're talking about Crane Bill and you're trying to get to intent, how is that not a genuine issue of material fact?
I don't disagree, Your Honor.
And I share Justice Bell's concerns about the procedural posture. And part of my confusion is, if it's a motion for summary judgment, then arguably your alternative argument about the HOA's conduct is still alive and has to be resolved by the district court. If it's a trial, then the district court didn't even consider that argument, which was one of the issues in the case. So it's kind of hard to figure out where we're supposed to go.
I again, and I apologize if I'm repeating myself, I just don't have more to go by. It doesn't look like a trial. It doesn't smell like a trial. It wasn't a trial.
Why didn't your client just pay off the super priority balance? Did they not get notice of the foreclosure?
They had notice, Your Honor. I mean, that is the million-dollar question. All I can tell you on that point is I'm not going to pay $500 to save my million-dollar lien is something no lender has ever said.
Right.
As the court noted in SFR, the lending community misconstrued this as a payment priority rather than a true super priority.
So if your position is that the court here granted summary judgment and so you're appealing saying the court shouldn't have granted summary judgment, so what's the point of your very, very recent submission of requests for judicial notice? So am I now supposed to find a genuine issue of fact based on something the district court never saw?
No, Your Honor. I think that is an additional point. I am running low on time, so I'm going to have to truncate my analysis of where I think the evidence was lacking. The district court effectively did two things wrong here. The district court didn't apply Crane's Bill correctly. Tough to fault the district court too much as the law was developing, but the district court also improperly viewed the evidence, whether we apply a de novo standard or whether we apply an abuse of discretion standard. Very briefly, the one piece of low-hanging fruit in this difficult record is SFR agrees between 2011 and 2014, $220 was paid to the super priority. It is a $523 super priority at most, so we're left with about $303 left. We have the one payment in 2008 that was at issue per the stipulation of the parties and the two payments in 2009. Before, and I'm trying to answer your question, Your Honor, before we get to the bankruptcy problem, the issue is that we don't need to get there because we don't have satisfaction of the Crane's Bill test. As the district court correctly concluded in its order, there was no direct expression of homeowner intent or HOA intent. So both of those points are lacking. Where the district court...
Wouldn't it be better? I mean, is intent too large and expansive a term? I mean, some of the case law speaks in terms of direct the payment. So I send a check to the homeowner or to the HOA, and it says, please pay the super priority lien with this check. You have a clear direction from me as the debtor to the creditor. So I guess that's an expression of intent. But then we have the creditor, and I think perhaps intent is not the right word. I mean, the creditor didn't clearly apply this either, but NSA applied some of it to costs and so forth, and yet we have case law that says when you pay the super priority, there is no costs and foreclosure and all that in that amount. So it strikes me maybe that the test needs to be clearer so we're not all here scratching our heads.
My view, after having the time I've had to prepare, is that the test is clear enough. And
okay,
I've answered Justice Kadish's question yet, but I will attempt to come back to that after answering that one. The test is we look for direct intent. That's one and two of the three-part analysis. We don't have it. The district court found it. The district court was correct. The problem is, and I'll try to loop this into answering Justice Kadish's question two, the district court then looked to bankruptcy to divine intent. And what the district court said in paragraph two or three of its conclusion is the homeowner hoped it would be able to comply with the plan. That's the disconnect. Hope is not intent. I hope that you rule in my favor today. I cannot make you rule in my favor today. Where intent becomes more tortured, for lack of a better word, is it does come into play in the equity factor where we're trying to divine intent. But we have the predominant issue, which is nowhere in the district court's order and was not considered. Covenant 4 of the deed of trust says the super priority is paid by the homeowner. That's the restatement. That's footnote 3 of Crane's bill. That's KK Real Estate. This is a workable decision. If we had a deed of trust that did not include that language, it is a different scenario.
So you're importing the implied intent into the equitable prong 3 Crane's bill analysis, not into the first element where we look at the homeowner's intent. Even under implied consent, it would be hard to say that, well, I'm looking at this deed of trust and it has this provision in there. So you would take that evidence, stick it under 3, the third analysis of Crane's bill, and say, we're going to divine intent that way.
I wouldn't divine intent at all. But yes, I think that that's more or less true, but it's not what I'm suggesting. It's
more of an implied consent.
Why is that contract more of a showing of intent than the bankruptcy plan that he got approved in bankruptcy?
Sorry for talking over you. Okay. The bankruptcy plan shows nothing. Keeping in mind, we're first starting with we don't meet the first two prongs because there's no expression of intent. The bankruptcy plan talks about the payment of pre-petition arrearages. To directly answer your question, why'd you get the request for judicial notice? You got the docket. The motion for relief from stay filed after the $91 payment says, from NAS says, homeowner made no post-petition arrearage payments. If you don't get there, you don't have to. The bankruptcy payment plan was breached. The case was dismissed on that basis. You got the docket from the court. The bankruptcy plan became a nullity. And again, if we focus on what the district court said, the district court divined, and this is why I disagree with the word divine, the district court divined hope. Hope is not intent. So, Your Honor, to answer that question directly, we have the deed of trust. We have the restatement. It says the predominant concern is a superior interest owed to a third party. Cranesville says we apply the payments to pay off the scariest and hairiest portion of the lien first, which is the super priority portion of the lien. If we then go to the bankruptcy plan, and I think this goes back to the original concerns the court was raising, the district court divined something from the bankruptcy plan that can't be divined. If we look at the actual records from the HOA, there is no application of payments to senior or sub, an application to the running total. There's no collection policy. When we look at NRS 116, an association balances its budget on an annual basis. True to the form of 116, this association, at least at the time, didn't care. It was getting dollars through the door that it could use to balance its budget that year, and it had no intent. So
it didn't clearly apply the payments in any articulable way.
They clearly did not, and that was where the district court was correct.
How can we use, if at all, Cranesville and what it talks about with intent, and I know that word's getting bantied around, when it comes to a third party like NAS taking the money and dictating what it's going to give back to the HOA up front?
What we've advocated to this court is NAS is not the HOA. Trustee intent is not included. I will concede that the weakness in that analysis is that NAS is an authorized agent. There's a legal question there. But regardless, NAS, the authorized agent, pushed $250 to the HOA and said it's payments. As we run through our analysis, which I'm going to do incredibly quick because I'm down to just a little over a minute, $523 total. $220 is stipulated. A $91 payment from the homeowner. A $250 allocation from NAS. Your Honor, I don't think you need to touch the issue of whether or not NAS could pull its money out, because with the $250 that was allocated, we have satisfaction of the super priority. If I may, I'm going to reserve my remaining 45 seconds.
Okay. I'll give you an extra 2 minutes for rebuttal, and I'll add 2 minutes to your comments.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So 17 minutes.
May it please the Court. Karen Hanks on behalf of SFR. I want to address the question of the trial issue. The stipulation in the record is at JA2339 through 2340. And this essentially was a bench trial in that the parties stipulated that there was no reason to drag in witnesses from the HOA or NAS just to testify as to what the documents already said. That's why we entered that stipulation. But she wanted us to come in and actually discuss those documents in an oral argument type fashion, which we did. So it is our position that that's the only reason you don't see the typical trial, and that we didn't drag in the witnesses just to read from documents, because that's all they would have done. And the bank agreed that that would have been a waste of everyone's time.
But Ms. Hanks, so procedurally, the case had come to the Supreme Court and it had been remanded on
Cranesville
summary judgment, right?
Correct, correct.
On a determination of summary judgment, on a motion for summary judgment. There isn't anything else. There's a hearing and then...
Right. So what happened was the summary judgment was granted in favor of the bank pre-Cranesville.
Right.
You remanded and said you need to do a Cranesville analysis. We need to see how these payments were actually allocated. We did supplemental briefing on that. We had a telephone call with the court about, well, do we need to come in and have a formal trial where we call witnesses? We had another hearing where we came in and actually first argued the supplemental briefing, and she said, I'm going to need a little bit more specifics, but do we need to drag in witnesses here, or can we just look at the documents in an oral kind of closing argument perspective and just talk about the documents?
So
and both the bank.
Was there ever a determination on the summary judgment then?
No, Your Honor, because we just supplemented our briefing post-remand, went into the hearing, and Judge Sturman said, do we need to have witnesses testify about these documents? Because I think I need to understand that. And then SFR, myself, and the bank's counsel at that time agreed, no, the witnesses are just going to read from the documents. You can glean what you need to glean from the documents themselves. We both agree it would be a waste of judicial resources to drag in a witness. I hand in the document. Do you see that payment is allocated to priority posting? Yes.
If it's a trial, how can the judge refuse to consider one of the issues that was raised by Deutsche Bank, meaning the conduct of the HOA? I mean, she specifically put in her order, I'm not going to consider that because of the remand from the Supreme Court.
What issue, Your Honor? I'm sorry. What issue did she reject?
With regard to the issue of fraud, unfairness, and oppression raised by the bank based on the instructions on remand, the court declines to consider this issue. So originally she ruled in summary judgment for the bank on the first issue and didn't reach everything else.
Right.
That gets reversed and it goes back. And you're now saying this was really a bench trial. But she doesn't go back and address an issue that was sitting there all along.
I think she understood the remand to be only the Cranesville analysis and that the bank did not say you could affirm.
That's all the first summary judgment was based on.
No, it wasn't. In the sense that the bank could have appealed and said you can also affirm on other grounds for fraud, unfairness, or oppression, and they did not. And so you only remanded for a Cranesville analysis.
Well, the court
so I
never reached that issue, right?
She didn't address
she
fraud.
Didn't.
I'm sorry.
The district court judge didn't address the fraud, oppression, or malice issue originally. How do they cross-appeal to us on that issue without a district court having ruled on it first?
I think they could have argued that you could have affirmed on other grounds. In other words, maybe SFR is right, we lose on allocation of payment for homeowner payment, but we had an independent basis and they could have done that. They didn't. So my best guess is Judge Sturman believed that the remand instructed her to only do a Cranesville analysis, and that's what she did. But now I want to address the Cranesville analysis because it is a patently false statement to say that there are no records of allocation. The records are very clear. We have three payments that we stipulated that we needed to discuss. A $91 payment made on July 15, 2008. That is the current amount of the assessments at that time. The reason why Judge Sturman found correctly that despite there not being a direction from the homeowner on his check, that it applied to the current assessment is it was made 1 month after his Chapter 13 plan was confirmed, meaning all of the assessments and fines and late fees and interest that he owed to the HOA, which is roughly $3,800, was encompassed in his plan payments that are supposed to go to the trustee. He would not make a payment on July, 1 month after his plan is confirmed, to pay debt that's in his Chapter 13 plan.
Well, but your argument is tantamount to saying then that you're going to pay off all the costs and fees ahead of anything being applied to the super priority, which it seems to me is contrary to the inference in Crane's bill or the statement that most homeowners would give direction to apply it to the super priority if they thought about it because they owe that money under the deed of trust to the lender.
Two problems with that, Your Honor. You don't get to that analysis unless you're talking about equity. So they're jumping ahead. They're missing the first two prongs. We have a clear allocation here.
Well, I think you may be overreading the Crane spill language, though, because they're very clear about what the homeowner... If the homeowner directs, then it's clear where we are, but... If the homeowner doesn't direct, the presumption is, unless there's something inconsistent, it would go to the super priority because consistent with the restatement and ABLE and all that, that's the oldest debt. It is
but
the
he
one
already
that
had,
is
he,
owed to a third party.
But even if you're getting to equity, the court didn't do that because the HOA did allocate it. At JA0539, that payment is crossed off the ledger as being due for July 2008. They indicate it's been paid. All the NAS records at JA551 refer to that payment as a post-petition payment, and it's carved out on the ledger. It is in no way applied to old debts, and it's always applied to the current July 2008 assessment. That's the allocation. But even if we got to equity, he already had a payment plan set up to pay any past due amounts that included the super priority. So a payment made 1 month after his petition is confirmed, his plan is confirmed, could not possibly, even in equity, go to a debt he already has a plan for. He's already going to pay that. The only reason the bank lost on that issue is he ultimately didn't pay any payments under his plan. But that wasn't dismissed until 2009. But 1 month after his plan is confirmed, he already has a plan to pay all his past due assessments and fines and costs. And then moving forward, post-petition, he's going to stay current with his HOA assessments. It would defy logic that he would want to stay not current and become delinquent on his current assessments while he already established a plan to pay his past and just be right back where he got started when he filed bankruptcy. That's the point that I think that counsel doesn't want to acknowledge. We can't really... lose sight that he wants to stay current on his HOA assessments, too, in addition to paying. The problem I think we're having conceptually here is it just didn't ultimately happen. He did violate his bankruptcy plan.
Well, counsel, can I just ask about Crane's bill? And I think your friend here on the other side was asked a similar question. Is this really a workable test, this three-part test? I mean, it seems like it'd be fertile for abuse because you can have an HOA who can hold open that super priority indefinitely so that it can retain its right to foreclose at its leisure. And in this case, you have a guy who owed a little over $7,000, where $523 of that was a super priority, and it never got paid down. So it just seems like then they end up selling the property for 13% of its full value. It just seems like this test maybe had some unanticipated vulnerabilities in it and that we need to re-examine it.
So a couple of points I'd like to make with that, Your Honor. The HOA always retains the right to foreclose even if the super priority is paid. So they have no incentive to not allocate monies to past due assessments.
Well, the incentive is that the deed of trust goes away if there's a super priority.
I don't think the HOA cares about that is what I'm saying. They have no incentive. They always have the right to foreclose as long as there's delinquent assessments. And so there's no incentive for them not to apply it to a certain amount versus another amount. It has no impact them in either event. However, it does impact them in the sense that, as you recognized in Cranesville and the restatement recognizes, there is an absolute priority to pay third parties first. Well, who are those third parties here? First Priority Posting, NAS, First American Title. That's exactly what the HOA did. They owe these people money because they hired them to help them with the collection process.
What about the lender secured by the first deed of trust, which is the oldest third party involved in this?
That's the third party in terms of borrower versus, but not in terms of HOA and homeowner. When we're talking about the third party owed there, these are vendors that the HOA has hired. And for you to say that they cannot allocate payments to these vendors who have done work and they have to wait, what, 7, 8 years to be paid because a homeowner is taking the long road to pay back their debt, that's where the equity doesn't make sense there. That's where they allocated these payments rightfully, and they didn't do it at the detriment of the bank.
What about the other homeowners?
Because exactly.
Shouldn't the super priority piece get paid first? Because the point is to protect the common interest community, right?
That doesn't protect the common interest community. What protects it is keeping the HOAs current. So that feeds into why the $91 payment would pay the current assessments. And for the two $500 payments where the HOA allocated it, they're part of 125, 91 was absolutely allocated to the current assessment because that protects the whole association. It protects all the homeowners. And so $34 of the amount is all that went to the super priority. So I think what we're losing sight here, unfortunately, from my perspective, a homeowner has no business paying the super priority. It's not a construct that applies to them. But I accept it. You found that a homeowner could pay it. But where we're getting confused here is you have a bank who's had notice since 2007 that this homeowner has been delinquent. They knew all the information of the delinquency. They knew the information of the monthly assessment. And they don't come to the table and pay the 9 months, and now we're going to squawk over an HOA.
Were they given notice
of their borrower where the borrower agreed to pay it, right?
They agreed to pay all of their assessments, which includes current assessments and all the fees associated with their community. That was just it's a generic PUD rider that simply says, I'm going to stay current on my assessments, not I'm going to stay current on that exact 9 months that gives super priority status.
Did you guys give notice to Deutsche Bank of the sale that was, and why was the sale moved, and was that subsequent sale that actually did occur, because I know it was supposed to happen on one day, it didn't. I think the homeowner was led to believe that as long as he paid $105 a month, he'd be fine. Then there was a subsequent actual sale that did not comport with the notice that he got. What was the notice to Deutsche Bank about the sale?
They got two notices of sales, Your Honor. At the time, there was a notice of sale on April 23rd, 2009, and that's JA-54. Then the subsequent operative notice of sale, it was January 12th, 2014. My understanding, I don't believe this is in the briefing, but I think it is in the record, but I can't be quoted on that because I'm not 100% sure. There are emails where my understanding is Deutsche Bank started foreclosure proceedings, so the HOA held off on their own foreclosure because in all of these cases, I believe HOAs would have preferred banks to foreclose, but they did not because they had depressed the market so bad. And so that's where my understanding is the delay was. And then this homeowner at that point, I think in 2011, got to the point where he was approximately $10,000 owed to the HOA, and they were just at a point where they could not hold off any longer. And the payment he was making was barely covering the current assessment because it had turned into $99 at that point. So he was not even touching upon much of his past due amounts. And so it was just.
But that was the deal the HOA made with him, right? As long as you pay this amount, we won't foreclose on your house.
If he complied with the payment plan, I understand there's argument that he did comply. That's not true. The record belies that. He actually was paying consistently late. Every month, HOA was still accepting it, but he really wasn't in compliance with the payment plan. It just got to the point where they couldn't forgive it anymore with his consistently late. He was almost paying well into the month.
And on the switch in trustee from NAS to A&K and the dispute that erupted between the HOA and...
Your Honor, they felt that he had breached it, which there is evidence of that in the record, and... I guess NAS didn't feel comfortable moving forward, so they fired NAS. I can't speak to that because I'm not the HOA.
But it wasn't an issue. On an equitable assessment and even on the issue of unfair practices?
It would not bear on allocation of payments, that's for sure. The bank has only argued it, and they only argued it post-remand. They changed their argument post-remand that this somehow impacted the sale. But Shadow Canyon, the sale price has to be accounted for because of that unfairness. So I can't speak to the HOA and what they did. But I have records, and you have records before you, that he did breach his agreement. It is a false statement to say that he was completely in compliance with his agreement.
But NAS was taking the position that they couldn't proceed with the sale, and they were fired for asserting that position, and they were taking it because they believed that the homeowner was living up to the plan, correct?
That's NAS's position. I'm letting you know that the record actually belies that, that he wasn't living up to it, that he was paying consistently.
I understand you're saying that the payments were late, but they were accepted late.
That's true. They were accepted late, but in fairness, he wasn't really complying. So it's but I can't speak to why NAS took that position. That was just their position. They're an agent. If they weren't willing to do something, they told him as a vendor, we're not willing to do that. HOA moved on to Alessi and Koning. Be that as it may, none of those facts account for or brought about the $56,000 paid by SFR to sale.
Wasn't there some separate litigation between the HOA and the homeowner, and that's resolved?
Correct. You're right, Your Honor. He actually sued both SFR, Alessi, and the HOA, and we settled that matter. And SFR even paid money, a modicum amount, but we paid money to resolve that issue. And then he lived in the house. I can represent to you. This is not in the record, but I can represent to you he lived in the house up to 2 months ago. So this is not a homeowner that really got shafted, if that's the perception here. I think this is a homeowner that unfortunately fell victim to the economy and couldn't afford his home anymore, but he was able to stay. He was able to...
Because that's outside of the record. I want to view this as a snapshot in time. Right. And back in 2009, at least when you were talking, it seemed that you had some umbrage with the concept that the homeowner could pay the super priority.
I do. I disagree. I've always disagreed with that.
Why on earth would that be a subject of disagreement that you could pay your own debt to your benefit so that you didn't have an unsecured hundreds of thousands of dollars unsecured? Why?
Because it has been taken to the nth degree of ignoring other reasons why other amounts would want to be paid to. For instance, you have a bank here arguing that despite a memorialized payment agreement where the payment includes keeping current on your current assessments. This bank has argued all $500 should have gone to a past debt. That means that homeowner would never get out of debt. That means every time he's paying an old assessment over here to save the bank from themselves, because they could have saved themselves, he's not paying the 91 here at the expense of the whole community. And so you have this moving target. So he keeps on accruing. And so he's paying someone here, but he keeps on accruing. How is that equitable? Well, we're looking at only one side of it that he might want to not be dischargeable. He's already filed bankruptcy. Granted, it was Chapter 13, but he converted that to Chapter 7. I have to be honest, I don't think a homeowner cares. I don't think he thinks a bank's going to be able to come after him personally, and I don't think he even knows what a super priority is. So it's just a stretch to say that when a homeowner is making a payment to try to stave off foreclosure from an HOA, that he would not want to keep his current assessments current so they can't foreclose on him, and that he would actually be making a payment to save the bank when the bank can come in and pay that too.
I appreciate, may I, Chief? I'm sorry.
Go ahead,
distinguish. The world in which we live in, because we're talking about things, but this concept that it's the bank's obligation and the bank, it's not the bank's HOA fee. I appreciate we said, hey, bank, if you don't protect it, you know, that was a snapshot in time, if you don't protect it, you can lose your first deed of trust. It doesn't somehow make them a bad actor if that was a little screwy at the time in terms of how people thought this was going to be interpreted, because it's the homeowner's obligation to pay the HOA and the homeowner's obligation to pay their mortgage as well. And to protect that. So I appreciate there's a lot of conflation, but the way in which the HOA operates under these I have money and then NAS can peel off whatever they want. So we just go, NAS can peel off because they got to get paid. But then when NAS says, I can't foreclose, you're like, well, that's NAS is wrong. Well, how much is NAS supposed to take off these payments? How does somebody even know what they're paying? How does somebody even know at the time on your ledger what is super priority? Not your ledger.
I know.
HOA. You
I know.
Ms. Hanks.
I do.
I know that you're
we always get called you.
So. Yeah.
No, I understand. But I think what we have to understand is I disagree with Mr. Brenner's statement that Cranesville said there's an assumption once we're in equity that all payments are paid to super priority. I don't see that you said that in Cranesville. I don't think that assumption should exist. What I'm trying
to point
to
is Galante.
I'm sorry?
The Tiscalante case where we determined that the equities favored applying you, the homeowner's payments to the super priority lien under similar circumstances.
That wasn't you, Your Honor. That was a federal district court, and he believed, he interpreted Cranesville, that because there was a collection policy that said the payments should be allocated that way, that that's why the payments were there. We here, we have specific allocation. I mean, there's no doubt there. There, so we're a little different in that case, but that wasn't you, Your Honor. But,
I'm sorry. You're right. That was federal.
Sorry. What I want to point out, though, what my only point is, I don't think we're in equity. I just don't. We have allocation here. But if we are in equity, I don't like the idea that the only part we're looking at is the protection of a bank when they have had countless notice. If we're in equity, we got to look at the whole picture. And this is a picture where the homeowner and the HOA owed money to third-party vendors. NAS is a third party. They hired them. They hired Priority Posting, and they hired First American Title. And there are current assessments that are affecting the community, too, that need to be paid. So to look at equity and have at all costs, all payments must go to the super priority, that's what the bank wants to posture. That's what I'm pushing against. That's, Your Honor. That's what I'm pushing against. And you're not making the bank come to the table, which was the whole point of this statute. That really was the point of this statute. And we can't lose sight of that. That's all I'm arguing.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sure. All right, Mr. Brenner.
Okay, I will try to do this very quickly. I want to correct one statement my esteemed co-counsel made. It's not the planned unit development rider we're relying on in the deed of trust. It's covenant 4 of the deed of trust at 1569. Charges, liens, borrower shall pay all taxes, assessments, charges, fined, and other impositions attributable to the property which can attain priority over the security instrument. Very direct. I also want to try to make this easier and call the court's attention back to what we said in SFR, what the Ucoya comments say, what you said in Cranesville, and what we see in their own brief. The legislative purpose of the super priority is to get some dollars through the door, not every dollar through the door. That's why there's an equitable balance between the two competing needs of payment of some dollars through the door and preservation of the deed of trust. Here, during the foreclosure proceedings between 2007 and 2014, the homeowner paid over $6,900, more than 10 times the amount of the super priority. As counsel said, NAS and the HOA were the architect of when they foreclosed. They could have said, no, we are foreclosing in 2009 when the initial notice of sale was served. They wanted to do this. They just backed out of it. And counsel and I are just going to have to agree to disagree on the record. I intended to go in detail over the evidence, including the evidence directly cited in the district court's order. I'm not going to have time. All I can do is ask and encourage you to scrutinize those sites. They do not say what the district court and counsel says that they do. There was no expression of intent. We are living fully in equity unless we are going to reinvent the wheel with a test that this court is yet to apply. Your Honor, I believe you meant the KK real estate opinion. That was the unpublished opinion I believe you were referring to in substance, and it says exactly what you've said it does. The sum of what I'm hearing from this court and this argument, there are too many disputes, there are too many unresolved issues. I think you can find the low-hanging fruit of resolving this based on equity, the deed of trust provision I read, and everything else I've said, if we follow the Cranesville analysis. But if we are not going to do that, I don't know how you resolve it on this record, given the posture that we have, without sending the case back to trial. I did want to say something briefly on equitable balancing, but I'll clam up if I'm out of time.
20 seconds, go.
It simply wasn't resolved. Counsel's wrong. We didn't have to cross appeal. We weren't an aggrieved party. We were the victor on judgment. That's it. Thank you.
No, I think we're good. All right. Thanks very much.